Hello, Jeff Salzenstein here. Monthly Tennis Evolution Plus VIP call. So happy to have you on the call. I know there's some folks that have not been getting the emails with the updates, so I've got to check with my back-end system on that. And of course, if you're not on the call and you're watching the recording, you'll obviously watch it on your own time. Really excited to do this call tonight. As it's crazy, every month I think, gosh, you know, what am I going to talk about next month? I cover a lot of stuff. And then sure enough, lots of cool things happen and lots of storylines and lessons to be learned. I feel get better as a coach on and off the court. I've learned a lot this year already. It's made me a better tennis coach. I've learned a lot of that through racket fit. Seeing how the body tennis and the body serve connection works. I've learned from another coach by the name of Sterling Strother, who's coming out to do a workshop with me August 9th and 10th in Denver. He's brilliant at strategy and getting players to understand how strategy relates to mindset and confidence. I've been learning from him and applying it to my players and getting accelerated results, which is amazing. Off the court, I continue to learn as well, both in personal development. I've got clients actually that don't even play tennis that I work with, and there's so many parallels between the struggles on the court and off the court. So learning there. I'm actually at a marketing conference right now, so it never ends. I just keep investing. So every time I get on a call, I hope to be a better version of myself. Had a little cough the last few weeks, so I'm going to put some mints in tonight. And what we're going to do this evening on the call is if I get the screencast export done, I'm going to pull up the Federer-Nadal match from the French Open. So I'm going to pull that match up. It is right now, it's exporting. Hopefully we'll get it. We're going to watch a match from a junior player, so you can learn a couple things there about how she warms up and practices. I also have a couple serves teed up. I've done a couple of serve analysis, so I'll break some things down so you can understand the serve better. And what else? What other housekeeping items do we have? Just a minute. We also have Herman on the call tonight. Herman is an up-and-coming coach who's helping us at Tennis Evolution, and we're going to be rolling out a video analysis concept in the next month or two, and he's going to be helping me with that. He's been studying my system for 5 years. Welcome, Herman, to the call, and thanks so much for all your help. You've been awesome. One of the bright young coaches out there today, so thanks for joining us. I am, the Federer match is taking a while, so we're going to move on, and I'm going to start. You're welcome, Herman, or you can call him Irwin as well. Anyway, Brian started with a question. I read a blog article about pusher strategy, oftentimes producing a zen-like attitude as they're not trying to win the point per se. I was thinking that might also be a consequence with an Agassi-like approach of crowding the baseline and hitting on the rise, thinking it may give me less time to think too much. Tennis mind game pushers. Let me take a look at this. Yeah, so there is an element of truth to this. And actually, Sterling talks about this with the art of winning, is that the objective is actually not to hit winners, not necessarily to go for shots. The objective, if you really want to get in the moment and have that zen-like attitude, the objective is to make two shots at a time. I've talked about this on another call. It's called the power of two. You can make two shots in a row consecutively, and then you reset. Let's see here. It looks like StreamFlow is definitely not working. You might not have the Federer match tonight. The downloading is not working. I'm going to try it again. So I'm going to give this another shot. So what I was saying is that two shots at a time, if you can string together two shots at a time and then reset and then focus on the next two shots, not with the intention of winning the point, not with the intention of hitting a winner or going for too much. It's about putting two shots together. And most players don't practice this way. Most players just hit cross courts and play for consistency. And it's just not, it's the old school way of practicing. I believe in 5 to 10 years, I've talked to Sterling about this, they're going to be looking at tennis. We're going to be practicing tennis a completely different way. It's already starting on my tennis courts when I work with athletes. We focus on that. And so what you want to start thinking about, and I'll show a court in a minute, but can you get your serve plus one down? Can you get your return plus one? Start to notice where you miss. A lot of players hit a return, and then when they're running to their backhand, they miss that first ball. And so pushers win because they're really good at stringing consecutive shots together. It's as simple as that. And you've got to be patient with the pusher and not do too much. So actually, the idea of almost collaborating with your opponent, or the idea of hitting two shots and then resetting, that's what the focus could be, rather than trying to win, win, win. The winning will take care of itself. So this idea of taking the ball early to crowd the baseline and hitting on the rise like Agassi so that you think less, that's going to be difficult because not many people can take the ball as early as Agassi with that consistency. So you'll be robbing yourself of time if you do that, thinking, oh, I won't be thinking as much, but you'll be robbing yourself of time. My feeling is whether you're standing on the baseline or you're moving way back, you want to understand heights of how high to hit the ball and where to hit the ball. And most of the time you want to play through the middle of the court, which I'm now, thanks to Sterling, calling it the cage. So I'm going to share my screen. This is a good time for me to show a court, show some things here, talk about the cage a little bit. So if you can see the court, the cage is essentially where my black arrow is here. If I draw a line at the 60-foot line all the way across to right here and then down here, it's basically a rectangle with the baseline being one of the lines. That's the cage. So essentially what you're trying to do is a lot of your shots, especially early in the point, you're trying to hit the cage. Because if you can hit the ball deep through the middle of the court, you reduce the risk of you making there. You can swing with more aggression, more racket head speed, because you have a big target. And you can actually cage them by not giving them a target or space by playing through the middle. And then if you execute this shot very well, then you can start to open up the court later in the point. But you really want to start playing through the cage. So I'm working with advanced players. If they're returning serve, okay, if they're returning serve on the far side, I tell them to aim for the add cage here. Add cage. Or they could aim, if the person has a weaker forehand, they could aim deuce cage. Okay, but we're trying to get it into the cage. Same thing with serving. When she's serving, she can hit a forehand to the add cage, a forehand inside out. I have one player who we're going to talk about later. On her forehand over here, she's been trying to go cross court and even pull her opponents off the court. She's missing wide. Now that we have her playing to add cage and actually more down the line, she's never missing. And she has complete clarity and confidence. And she's not missing. She's confident. It's all because of this mindset of playing to the cage first, instead of cross court, down the line, thinking too much. We're taking the thinking out of it. So Bryant, to your point, if you can just think, you know what, 60 to 70% of my points, I'm aiming for the cage, because if I hit the cage really well and I execute that shot, I'm probably going to get a short ball. I'm probably going to get a ball that I can angle later. Most people cannot hit it to the cage early in the point. That should become the objective. And then once you win that point, you focus on the next point, and your goal is to win 2 points in a row. So staying in the moment is about creating, well, staying in the moment is about focusing on those two shot patterns and executing that. Winning 2 points in a row gives you momentum. And momentum is derived from the word moment. So we're staying in the moment, we're winning 2 points in a row, we're creating momentum. And then if we win 3 points in a row, we get what's called a conversion point. And so this is a new way of scoring tennis. You're now no longer playing the score. So many people get tight when it's 5-4, 5-3. But if you can just remember, you know what? My goal right now is to win 2 points in a row. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to hit two shots in a row and win 2 points in a row. And then when I win 2 points in a row, I'm going to try to make 3 points in a row for a conversion. So let's say that you are at deuce and you win a game and you win 2 points in a row. That's a momentum. And then you start the next game, you're thinking, okay, if I win this first point, that means I got three in a row. And that type of scoring is going to take you out of the result. So someone just got on. I'm going to have to unmute. I don't know why I can hear people right now. There we go. Anyway, so, you know, playing to win 2 points in a row or 3 points in a row is a lot different than winning a match, winning a set. It's a whole different mindset shift. And then knowing where you're going to hit the ball, if you go 60 to 70% of the time into the cage, you're golden. Now, the crazy thing is with playing pushers, the rallies are not going – the percentage of rallies above eight balls total back and forth, it's still going to be only 20 to 30% of all points. So what's happening is that playing the pusher, you're getting impatient and you're missing – a lot of times you're going for too much and you're missing in the 0 to 4 range. You're missing one of the first four shots. In many cases, it's one of the first two shots on your side of the net. So if you can get really good, solid at your first two shots and then your next two shots after that, now you're in that eight ball rally, which, again, it's not actually happening as often as you think. So that's the idea, okay? Focus against the pusher on hitting the cage more so you open up the court and focus on getting past that 0 to 4 and then that 5 to 8. So if you get to 0 to 4, that means you made your first two balls. If you get to through 5 to 8, that means you made the next two balls because they still have to hit two balls too. Now it becomes a game within the game. That's what we're looking for. So what I want to do now is I want to show a warm-up and show you a couple things from this warm-up. We're going to talk a little bit about footwork. We're going to talk a little bit about technique. And hopefully you might be able to pick up a few things. So this player is a really good player, 12 years old. So let's watch here. Obviously, you can comment as well. So the first thing that I see is she's actually dropping the ball, and she's feeding, and she's hitting a backhand. Now, maybe she wants to work on her backhand, but typically you're going to drop the ball and hit a forehand. I know it seems obvious, but I just want to make sure most of you out there are doing that. Now, next thing is she's got a really Western grip. So we're going to want to try to get her into a semi-Western grip. Okay. She's pretty good with her offhand, but then right there, that's a pretty big backswing. So over time, we want to get her on the right side of the body. We don't want this racket to cross over. So this is something we're going to want to improve. Also, you'll notice her offhand drops a little bit, should stay up more. So even though it's pulling into the body, it should stay up more. And you can also see, because of her grip and her spacing, there isn't a lot of extension. So see how bent her arm is? And then she goes down. So I would prefer to have her finish higher. Okay. We want her to finish higher on the forehand. So she's got to change her grip, she's got to shorten her backswing, and she's got to finish higher. Other than that, she's good to go. Again, this is a high nationally ranked player. So that was pretty good little run through, but I'd like to see a buggy whip there. So the racket right there is going to go up like this. Okay. See what she does on this backhand. Very good. Look at that extension on the backhand. That's amazing. Fantastic extension. See her run over. Again, look at where her racket went. I'd like to see the racket go up on the running forehand. I'd like to see the racket go up. She's got great hands. Okay, so like right here, she comes out of that wide forehand and she's recovering back. Okay. She's recovering back. Her opponent hits a backhand straight ahead. I'd like to see her take this ball and move to her left and get around it and hit a forehand. Instead, she just waited and hit a backhand. So we want to build good habits and get more forehands. Great extension, though. Excellent. That backhand's money. Good hands again. Again, she feeds with the backhand. So let's see what she does with her extension here. Yeah, so not as great extension there. See how she kind of wraps around and kind of raises the shoulder? She's going to want to get more extension on that ball. See what she does here? It's much better. That's good too. Again, do you see how she moved? See how she moved to her right? We want her to move to her left to hit forehands. Okay, here we go. Watch this. Yeah, see, she took two steps to her right to hit a backhand. We want her hitting forehands. Good extension. It's great extension on that backhand. Pretty good extension. Like to get that elbow to clear a little bit more. See how she just moved right to hit a backhand? So when I see that, I'm thinking, oh, maybe this person's not confident in their forehand. Watch the finish here. Yeah, so a little better finish there. I'd like to see more extension on that forehand. See, feeds a forehand. I talked to her about this. You want to feed a forehand. You want to hit a back forehand. Okay, we talked about the backswing and the Western grip. Now, she took this ball a little too high, so we need to see her move up to it and use it back to front and hit it flatter, or move back and let it drop, not stay right there. She's staying in between. So again, she moves right to hit a backhand. Should have hit a forehand. All right, so the other thing is they're ready to take serves. Nobody took volleys or overheads, okay? So here, these are high-level, nationally ranked juniors, and I can already see things that are falling through the cracks. Not moving right to hit a backhand, feeding with the backhand, not using enough buggy whips on the forehand, not enough extension, not hitting volleys or overheads before serves. These things add up over time. So you want to think about, like, okay, do I have great habits when I'm practicing and focusing? I want to see, Maybe I can find the chat. Power of Two call was in April. If you guys want to check it out. Thanks, Herman. Highly recommend it. Yeah, familiar with Sterling's stuff. Had a conversation with him 6 to 9 months ago. Was thinking that I've stayed back too much, which also, as a consequence, means I have a lot of running, which I would like to avoid. I have a good timing and have started working on the On the Rise exclusively. Anyway, I was in a tournament and played 3 matches. Lost all 3. First opponent there was no way I was going to win. Second one I should have beaten. Third one was better than the second, but I played him well. My feeling is that against the second and third opponents, I could have won if I was more aggressive with my positioning and not necessarily with my shot selection. Wozniacki does also run around her forehand to hit backhands. Yeah, some people do it. It just depends what kind of game style you want to have. And this girl, I'd like to develop her into a forehand player. She has the ability to do it. Be great, Bryant, to get matches. If you want to send matches into us and we watch you, we could help you crack the code. I think it would have helped with taking less risky shots as far as placement and pace, but still aggressive in that I'm stealing time from my opponent. Yeah. So again, if you want to send us a video sometime, we can take a look at it. Let me see what else is going on with the comments and the questions. Okay. So let's see here. A couple more comments. This is from Jerome. There are 2 things I've learned that have helped facets of my game as a result of your suggestion, Jeff. On the service toss, I have greatly improved my toss by holding the ball in 3 fingers only. That is the thumb, index, and middle finger. After struggling for years with the toss, this tip helps considerably, along with turning my wrist counterclockwise to aid in keeping the ball out front a little more towards the net. That's awesome. So we want to use these fingers to toss with, not the ring finger or the pinky finger. On the backhand slice, your suggestion was to draw the racket straight back and swing through with a slight side spin. And executing the stroke this way rather than coming from high low, I've developed a very strong offensive backhand, especially if I tighten the pinky near the butt of the racket handle. My arm feels strong with more thrust into the ball when I do it that way. Kudo to you for those suggestions, Jeff. All right. Thank you, Jerome. I appreciate you, as always. Okay. So next, what I want to go through is a serve analysis. So we're going to look at a serve analysis. All right. So let's get this rocking. Yeah. Share the screen. Serve analysis right here. So, first thing I notice, weight going forward, weight shifting back. I'd like to see actually some unweighting of the front foot. So a lot of players, when they shift back, they still have some weight on the front foot. I'd like to see that toe of the front foot come off. Okay. Now, see this a lot with players. Racket goes up. Arms go up. See how they go up without a turn? This is classic. And I'd say 80% of the videos I do, I'm trying to get someone to turn their shoulders more instead of just bringing the racket up like she is here. And she also has to toss the ball super high. So here's the height of the toss. Watch how much it drops before contact is made. Oops. Let's take it back to the top. Right there. I'll just keep the cursor there. I mean, that's a good, 4 to 5 feet? That's a lot. Then you can also see how bent over she is after contact. See that? We want her taller with her upper body. So the goal, the goal is to actually turn the shoulders here. So we should see the shoulders turning, the arm bending. We should see a shoulder turn in here. Instead, it's almost reversed. Look where the arm is. Only until right about there does she get maximum turn. Okay, so let's compare that to my serve. I mean, we could show Federer, we could show others. So notice this. I mean, you tell me, you know, you tell me which serve is technically better, right? She can do all the mindset tricks she wants, but there will be limitations with this serve. We want more of this position. So you got to work on turning the shoulders, focusing on elbowing the enemy. Of course, we want to lower the toss. Look at the difference in the toss here. So this is the height of my toss. It only drops about 8 to 12 inches. It's a big difference in the 4 feet, okay? I mean, look how long she's waiting. She's bringing the foot up. She's only loaded right now. And what's happening too is the racket is dropping before the legs fire up. So she's got what's called an early racket drop. And this is messing up her timing and her sequence. So my recommendation is that she focuses on turning at the beginning, okay, tossing it lower, bending the knees sooner, and just going. So it's going to feel super quick for her because she's used to being way up there, right, or tossing the ball way too high. So that's the big thing is I want her to start in a half serve, like right around here, in a platform stance, and then just work on turning and going with a low toss. That's what we want. See how high that toss is? And that elbow is in a decent position there, except lack of turn, but then look how the elbow drops before it goes in. Okay, it drops before it goes to make power. Okay. If you've got questions, let me know. So again, as a summary on the last video, is we want her to unweight the front foot. We want a shoulder turn in the beginning. We want, ideally, I want a platform stance, but we want that leg moving up sooner because we only want this player to toss the ball so that the toss gets about, I mean, I'd say about right there. That's as high as it should go. So the knees should be starting to bend, ready to go up to the ball. But it just takes so long to develop that it throws the rhythm and the timing off. That elbow drops in right there. Okay. She could pronate a little more as well. So there might be, if we did a screen on her, we might see she can't rotate. So again, a lot of these limitations can be showing up because the player can't pelvic tilt. They can't tilt their pelvis like this. They can't rotate their pelvis along their hips. They can't rotate it. Okay. If you can't do those two things, then you're probably going to do a lot of tossing where you can't turn or coil. So just keep that in mind. All right, let's move to another video. All right, this is from a young gentleman who's going to be a high school freshman. His dad ran out. His dad reached out to me, and big problem's been double faults. So a lot of double faults. We did a call this past week. You're looking at the serve first. All right, so. Here's the deal with the serve. So typically when someone serves from the deuce court, we don't want them this turned. You can see the front foot's actually turned back away a little bit from the baseline, and this foot is turning out. Okay. What's interesting is he actually turned it back in a little bit. But the bottom line is, we don't want to be this turned out with the foot. We don't want to be this sideways. Then I want you to notice his spine. He has what's called an S posture. So this player is actually going to come visit me, and we're going to work on his pelvic tilt. Okay, we're going to work on the ability for him to tilt his pelvis like this. A lot of people struggle with this. It's one of the movement screens. Okay, we're also going to help him learn how to rotate his pelvis like this. A lot of players wag the dog. We call it wagging the dog. So if you can't rotate your pelvis and you can't tilt your pelvis, you're going to compensate in other areas. This is a big breakthrough, big thing I've learned in the last year. So I can see with his S curve, he's got some work to do here. You can also see in this case, when he's releasing the ball, at least he doesn't bring the arms up together straight, but we'd like to see more of that elbow the enemy, right? We'd like to see, again, look at the difference in position. People wonder why they're not serving as well as they could. Look at the difference. This is not the same stroke as this one. Okay, so we got to figure out how do we get him to use his pelvis better and how do we get him to turn? Because that's his trophy position with no turn. Also, pay attention to this hand. It's up like this. If he were to rotate his arm so that the palm would face the side fence. So if he's like this and he were to rotate like this, he could actually reach up higher for the ball. That's a subtle thing, okay? That wouldn't be the first thing that I would change. Yeah, the first thing I would adjust is the stance. I'd have him pointing a little bit more. The second thing I'd do is I'd work on this elbow of the enemy. Look where the elbow is right now, okay? Look how far it is out of the hand. Similar distance out of the hand, and look at where my elbow and my hand are. Okay, it's just taking too long for him to develop. But then I would say, you know what? That's an amazing racket drop. He's got a better racket drop than I do. Very similar. And so probably tossing a little too far to the left. See how kind of bent over he is there? I got another video today for someone who's bent over. You can see I'm more upright. There's ways to practice that. You can actually swing, and when you jump and land, you can hop three times and get really tall. But you also probably need to work on your body. If you're that sideways at contact, you probably need to work on that. Okay, so the big things here are the stance, modifying the stance, and then this first move, being able to turn, get the elbow out of the way, get into a nice solid trophy position. That's the thing that I see is a lot of players want to improve their serves, but it just doesn't look like the pros, right? These serves are not looking like pro tennis players. So you got a lot of work to do to try to get that to happen. So we will see what the deal is there. Okay. I'm hoping you guys. Oh, yeah. Herman says, I'm seeing an S curve, S posture. It looks like he's squatting on his stance. Maybe he's trying to copy the pros who get that front foot parallel to the baseline and back. Yeah. I mean, that's what's happening, but he should do that more in the ad court, not in the deuce. He should be a little more pointed. Brian says, I'm having toss problems too, messing with Ray Owens' serve motion. And I got great results, but as a consequence, my toss is higher. When I try to lower the toss, my legs barely get involved and I lose my leg drive. My best result as of late is your one half serve technique, but I want to graduate to a more full motion like Ray Owens because I was hitting 100 miles an hour. So again, I think the half serve is like amazing, absolutely amazing for changing your elbow position, learning how to turn, forgetting about the first move. I would stay in that half serve. And then if this is the half serve, then I would gradually move it down. I'd move it to here and here and here and just keep moving it down without compromising that turn. Yeah, the half serve is golden. Another problem is keeping my arm up high. I need to go back to my video and see if I did it with Raonic. Lastly, I prefer topspin serve. My Raonic version also caused some shoulder pain, as it was a flat serve. So yeah, keeping this arm high, again, it could be a technique thing, but it also could be a physical thing. You could have really tight lats. And so we don't wanna underestimate the fact that your body could be keeping you from doing these things, okay? Hey, Brian, have you tried the three-quarter serve drill? Keep in mind that having a loose grip and arm can help you get hit harder. Yeah, it's a great tip, Erwin. I mean, three quarters, great. I like people here. Then we move them down here. Then we move them down towards the knee. And that's the three quarter serve. And there's these progressions that we do before any type of technique were to break down. Okay. So, yeah, try three quarters for sure. It's going to be cool to see some of the changes being made with these players. Okay. Let me look at my list. I want to talk about a few things. And I'll see if the Nadal match. Oh, I think the Nadal match might be ready. This would be great if we did this. Who's your pick for Wimbledon? Who's going to win Wimbledon? I got my pick. Let's see here. Yeah, I got my pick. Okay. I'm going to share the screen here. We are going to talk strategy, Nadal style, and Federer style. All right, let's see what happens here. Took the sound off. All right. So this point right here, I'm going to go back a little bit. Okay. So this point right here. So he goes cross court. Federer goes down the line. Of course, Nadal goes cross court. And then right here. So Federer's played a great point. Look at the positioning. He's in better position. He goes inside in here, which is risky. Okay, Nadal gets over there and plays D. This ball should go where? Down the line. I mean, Federer's not going to beat Nadal with crazy angles. So he tries an angle there. And he hits it here. And how many steps did Nadal have to take here? Right? Look where he's standing when he makes contact. Okay. Splits. 1, 2, 3. I mean, so he took 3 steps to get to the ball. And then he hits an angle himself. It's an absolute dart. What he should have done is gone down the line. Yeah. That ball goes down the line. So Federer needs to play straighter, not with angles. That's an example. Again, points like this could turn the tide if he had the right strategy. Tricky point. You know, it was windy that day. So right here, okay, so watch this. Again, not a smart point by Federer. I think he was trying to break down Nadal's forehand, but on clay, it's going to be hard to do because you can't really rush Nadal on clay. But so he goes here. Now, this ball, I think, should go right back down the line or like right back, like right here. Instead, Federer goes cross, and then Nadal goes cross, and then Federer goes cross again. See, my feeling is he should have gone down the line there, like 1-1. He goes cross again, and then he gets beat down the line. So basically by playing cross court 2 or 3 times, it really hurt him. Okay. So he's winning with this inside in. Bad luck. Great dip forehand down the line by Nadal, of course. So if we look at this point, okay, so Federer runs around and goes inside out. Pretty risky because Nadal could just rip this down the line. But he plays it safer. Okay, so Federer goes down the line to the forehand. Okay, and then he runs around again. I think this is dangerous for him to be running around this far on a clay court. I know he doesn't want to hit the backhand, but he's just giving so much ground. Now, look at the shot he had to hit to be offensive. And then you can just see Nadal digs it out. So like right here, and I guess you go cross court. He tried to go for an angle, so it's probably the right play. His big thing is he just didn't put the overhead away because of the wind. So all in all, good play by Federer there. All right, so he goes cross court. Watch this. Cross court, that's 2, 3, 4. Slice down the line, that's good. But here's the thing. Okay, so he goes 4 in a row cross court. No bueno. He should only go 2 in a row max. If I were coaching him, I'd say don't go more than 2 in a row to the forehand. But here's where he loses the point. Even though normally, yeah, that shot right there, he lost the point. He had just gone 4 balls cross. He needs to come over that ball because by slicing down the line, And it all is like, oh, thank you very much. He doesn't care if someone slices to him. It doesn't bother him. That's why I laugh when players are, I don't laugh, but players are like, hey, just slice to Nadal. Nadal is not going to be fazed by a slice. He needs to come over that ball and hit it. He lost the point on the slice backhand there. It's just got to be so tough to be Federer dealing with Nadal. It's a great play. See how he went inside out, and then he went safe slice down the line. It's really windy there, apparently, huh? So there's an inside in, and there's a down the line. So I like this point. And then he goes drop shot. So, okay, he's probably going to win that point against a lot of players. I'm not a big drop shot fan for, I mean, especially in big moments. And I've seen Federer do this in big moments and it not work out. Of course, it has worked out. But my feeling is he just hit a positive forehand down the line. Now, instead of drop shotting, he could just go inside in on it or inside out. So I'm not crazy about the drop shot for Fed, especially against Nadal. So that's a great return. So if he hit returns like that, you're going to win a lot of points. Now, he goes backhand again on the approach shot. Obviously, that's the game plan. But if I'm playing him again, I'm thinking, okay, I know he has a great running forehand. But he hits the serve, right? And then look where he is. I mean, why not just go hard inside out? Said he kind of rolls it, and then Mr. Nadal runs over and hits a backhand angle. So just little subtleties I think Federer could do a little better. So he rips it. So look where that ball went. It went cage. That's called add cage right there. That's what we want. And look what he did. He goes add cage. He successfully hits it, and Nadal's hitting off his back foot. Nothing on it for him. Okay, now this ball should probably go cross court. Okay, I'll take down the line. Coach was wrong, but I'll take down the line. And that slice is going to lose it. So he might end up winning this point. Oh, he just went cage again. Do you see that? So this is, again, this is a big thing to notice. Two shots in this rally, he went hard middle or hard cage. Look at this. And look where he was. It's not like he tried to go cross court. He hit it right back to Nadal, took the time and space away from him. Now he has a ball to attack. So that's what I want for you. I want you to really try to get – uh-oh. That's crazy, huh? That's the problem with taking that as a forehand, right? So he hits this amazing backhand. And then I guess it could have been a forehand there. But look where it lands. There's no angle. He needed to hit over here, side angle or here. No angle on that one. That's not what we want. Play cage early in the point, and then you can go out wide after. All right. So there's line. There's cage again. See, cage, and he got the ball he wanted. Now, I'm not crazy about that. He won the point. I'm not crazy again about that drop shot, but he's hit three cages now and been offensive on the next shot. Inside in. There's your down the line. I like this. There's your inside out. There's your safe cross. And then he tries to go down the line there. I mean, again, probably low percentage. It's windy. You can always second guess after the fact. But it just looks like, as I'm watching, Nadal has clearer patterns than Federer. Federer's kind of all over the place with his choices. I can't really predict what he's going to do, whereas Nadal is just running the same pattern. He just knows what he's doing out there at a higher level. Yeah, he beat Federer pretty bad. Okay, he goes inside out, and he goes middle. Not hurt at all. Inside in. So he's really, now he's starting to go inside in. Okay, so here he goes. Oh, unbelievable shot, huh? How about that? The angle. There's a cage. So Nadal just caged him on that ball, and he was late. Here, we can take it back. Yeah, right there, he caged him on that ball. Probably could have gone line there. Boy, Nadal's backhand has improved, huh? There's a cage shot right there. Didn't get hurt. See, the slice backhand? I'm not crazy about it here. It's too cute. Now he's going to get hurt. See that? He's sliced two in a row. So basically, when Federer plays his Nadal's forehand too much, when he plays too many times in a row, when he slices too much, okay, and then when he doesn't attack with enough angle. So if he attacks through the middle a little too much, he's in trouble. That one's a little bit trickier, but it's basically too many forehands in a row that Nadal's hitting and too many slices. He's got to keep playing straight ahead. Let's see what the comments are. There's probably some comments. How far do you think Sophia can? I think she can go far. Oh, Federer seeded two. I wasn't aware of that. Didn't know that. There should be. I mean, if Nadal's ranked ahead of him, he should be seeded ahead of him. He's playing unbelievable on any surface. All right, let's finish this out. Bad luck hitting the let cord. But again, I think Federer's just playing too much to Nadal's forehand. I understand going inside out once in a while, but look at all these forehands. He hit like three in a row there. And then here's four. Here's another one. And there's another one off of a slice. I mean, you just got to play Nadal's backhand, right? A little bit more. Okay, that's a good cage right there. So he went middle and he got what he wanted off the return. There's another cage. So look, he's going middle now and he's actually getting what he wants. But the bottom, look at that. He went cage again. That slice is going to hurt him. Yeah, so I just don't like the Federer slice, especially on clay. He's got to come over the ball more. I've been saying this. Whenever he comes over the ball against Nadal, he plays better. Just too tough. Just too tough. Okay, let me go back to a couple more notes, all right? I'm going to wrap it up tonight. Couple things. Tennis Channel, I made 6 videos last year, 1-minute tips on Tennis Channel. A couple of them aired during the French Open. That was awesome. Super, super excited about that opportunity. So if you're watching Tennis Channel, don't be surprised if you see yours truly there. Just honored to have that opportunity. So, so cool. I'm working with a player this summer. She's a Division I player. We'll probably get some videos. We'll see if we can get some videos of her. I wasn't expecting it because I'm not doing a ton of teaching, but she came back. She asked me to help and get help. And what's so interesting about this story is that she really had she really struggled this year and she lost a lot of confidence. She doubted herself. And fortunately, I've worked with her in the past. So she picks things up fast. She knows the tennis evolution philosophy, the Salzy system. And she, in 2 or 3 weeks, she's a completely different person. And again, it just goes to show you that you can be struggling with your tennis and you can be very confused. And then if you get clarity on, you know, where to go with the ball and what to focus on, she changed her mindset. She changed her strategy. We had her create a story. She's reading her story all the time, like her new story, the way she wants to show up every day. She's being very mature on the court. She's staying more neutral. I'm really trying to help her to stay neutral and just observe what's happening instead of judging it so much. And she's just really embraced it. She's playing to the cage a lot. Her forehand, I mentioned earlier, she usually likes to go cross court. We have her going ad cage. It's almost like a down the line forehand through the middle of the court. It's helped her so much. We're working on her spacing. Whenever she gets too close to the ball, which most of you out there are getting too close to the ball when you miss, she's creating more space on her forehand. Her backhand, she's working on using her top hand more, kind of like Andy Murray, like turning the ball over a little bit more. And we're doing some really cool drills that are helping her. And so she just has clarity. Oh, we're working on her serve. She's going to a physical therapist to work on her serve, where we're getting her body to open up, her hips and her ankles. And I'm working with her on her technique. So see if I can, maybe I can get a before and after next month, but her whole game is developing. We're working on her technique, her footwork, her mindset, her strategy, all the principles that are inside Tennis Evolution Plus. So that's what's so exciting is I'm not like teaching her things that you're not getting. Like, yes, I've probably got to make some videos on the cage, but basically in my strategy courses, I talk about playing through the middle of the court more. And she's embracing it, and it's really exciting to see. We were watching match footage together, watching her play a match. And at the end of it, I basically said, this is like a math formula. You know, if you understand the formula, you can just practice the math formula every day. And it really resonated with her because she's a great student. I think she's in human sciences or biology. But with the math, she's looking at it like a math problem. And that's what we want to do. We want to solve things. We want to solve our tennis with this view. Yes, it's great to be artistic, but to really understand the patterns, where the ball goes, what to focus on. And so she's looking at it like a math problem, a formula. And she voxed me the other day. She sent me a vox, and it was just fantastic. You could hear the joy in her voice, like the love of the game has come back from someone who wanted to quit tennis 2 months ago, or who was so frustrated getting benched in her starting lineup. And now you feel this joy, like I'm playing the best I've ever played. This vox is amazing. Like, maybe I'll play it sometime. I mean, you should hear it. But yeah, she's doing amazingly well. It just shows when people are ready to make a change, when they've been through adversity, they can make huge jumps. And so it's been a true, it's just been amazing to be able to see someone change that much in 3 weeks and gain that much confidence. So I've got some other stories from the last month, but we're at the top of the hour, so I'm going to save them for next week, talk about them. You guys are awesome, as always. I appreciate you. You're asking good questions. You're commenting. Again, I want to thank Herman for being on the call tonight. He's going to be inside the Facebook group. He's going to be sending content, you know, helping me. He's going to be helping me with the video analysis business. It's amazing. We also have our app that we're updating. All of you are going to have access to the app, and you're going to get access to all of the courses in there. So big things coming. You're going to have one login eventually here. We're getting there, a couple months to go. One login online, one login in the app. Everything's going to be more seamless. Just like I said, super excited for all the things coming our way at Tennis Evolution, and you're a big part of it. So I appreciate you all. Thanks for joining me tonight, and we'll see you next month on the call. Thanks.